I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time. And around here, what a time it is. After our broadcast on Friday night, folks, we went outside to find that our tire had been slipped all the way around in what Tim Lesperance calls skinning a tire. Problem is, he's told everybody that he knows how to do that trick, and nobody else knows how to do it. So we didn't report it to the police. We know who did it. We're in the process of getting confirmation from the tire company that the tire was indeed slit and was not a sidewall failure. And if any of you have heard Tim talk about how he does it, want to see what it looks like when it's completed, just come on by anytime when I'm here or up to the house, and we'll be happy to show you. Annie and Pooh are terrified, so now she drives and I ride shotgun, literally. For those of you who were looking for the manual to send to the Investigating Committee on Waco, it can be purchased from NTIS. NTIS. The number is 703-487-4684. That's 703-487-4684. Ask for the Military Publications Order Desk. Get a copy. I hope 500 of you get copies and send it to the investigative committee, who claim that they can't get their hands on one. It is the manual, the operations manual on the use of CS gas. Also, folks, we've lost our other working team here. Never fear, though. Everything will be done. Everything will get out. You will get your Veritas. All the people who have not received their membership package yet, it's being mailed out. It'll be in your mailbox within 2 weeks. It took a while for some of the background investigations, and of course, the bombing in Oklahoma City brought everything to a screeching halt, as the entire service devoted every bit of its effort to the investigation of what went on there. Also, the liberals and socialists are running mad, and I mean mad. They can't believe that everything has turned around, and the hearings are proving everything that we said we found in that investigation in Waco, Texas. It is a terrible story that is coming out, ladies and gentlemen. And it's enough to strike fear in the heart of every American across this country. Also, the very people who were calling the militias and patriots of this nation racist have turned out to be the real racists. The BATF and other law enforcement agencies holding a party in the woods with a big sign tacked onto a tree, "Niggers, check in here." Ladies and gentlemen, I never would have dreamed that this could happen in the United States of America. I never would have believed it in my wildest dream, in my imagination gone berserk. But here it is. Last night I went to bed with a copy of Julius Caesar, the latest edition, well researched, probably better than any other ever written. And guess what? What is happening today not only happened in Nazi Germany in the 1930s, but it happened in the Roman Empire, and in fact brought the Roman Empire to its knees. Don't go away. We have a very, very special guest tonight, a man that I deeply admire. He is a true American. He understands the divide and conquer principle. He is the executive director of the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. And we'll be right back to talk with him. Don't go away. You don't want to miss one single moment of tonight's broadcast.
My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty. Of thee I sing. Land where my father died, land of the pilgrim's tribes, from every mountainside let freedom ring. My native country blue, land of the noble free, thy name my love. I love thy rocks and rills, thy woods and templed hills. My heart is raptured through like that of a
ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome to the broadcast probably one of the few other men in America besides myself who are truly attacked by all sides. Welcome, Aaron Zellman. Aaron, are you there? Hello?
Can you hear me all right?
I got you now.
All right. Good to be with you.
Well, I'm certainly happy, pleased, and I think most of the listening audience have been listening, been looking forward to this with great anticipation. Why don't you give us a little background on who you are and what your organization is all about, how this got started, and then we'll get into some very interesting facts.
I started Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership about 6 years ago, this coming October. I felt it was important to have a platform to speak from publicly to challenge the leadership, in double quotes, of the Jewish community that supports gun control and takes the position that that they speak for virtually all Jews in the community, and to let them know that they could not be more wrong, and to publicly challenge them to stop doing dangerously stupid things, particularly supporting gun control. So that was the reason for starting the organization.
Right.
And our focus is, we have a very single focus, and that is the total destruction of gun control worldwide.
Now, there's a real good reason for that, Aaron, one which you certainly have...
The reason from our perspective is, simply put, that gun control has proven itself to be the key to genocide. In one of our books called Lethal Laws, where we take the actual, where we publish the actual gun control laws from the countries that had the major genocide since the turn of the century, every single one of these genocides was preceded by gun control. And the gun control laws that were passed in Stalin's Russia, Nazi Germany, and Mao's China, and the Ottoman Empire, and Idi Amin's Uganda, and so on and so forth, are really not much different than the gun control laws that are now being promoted in America and Canada and Australia.
Now, there's been an awful lot of talk that the 1968 gun legislation was actually a carbon copy of that the first gun legislation that was pushed through the Reichstag in Germany in the 30s. Is there any substance to that?
Now, let me give you a little more insight into that. Another book we did called The Gun Control Gateway to Tyranny, we explained to people that the Nazis did not bring gun control to Germany, but in fact, and this is the dangerous part about gun control, they inherited it. And it was put on the books by the do-good, feel-good crowd of the Weimar Republic in 1928, which was 5 years before the mad creature came to power. And there, in 1928, they registered all guns and gun owners, and they took a group of people called Gypsies, Romanis, and they forbid them to own firearms. That was in 1928. When the Nazis came to power, they simply took over the registration list. And the registration forms were so thorough. In fact, I'll just give you an example. In 1928 in the Weimar Republic, they had a permit system. And the permit system was so thorough, one would have to have a permit to go hunting, to buy ammunition, to give a firearm to someone in your family. You had to have a permit. You had to renew your permits all the time just to own a firearm. So 5 years of all these permits, it was so thorough that when the Nazis came to power, they did not have to pass any new gun control laws until 1938. And there they passed two main laws. One was a handgun control bill, and the other was, the day after Kristallnacht, November 11, 1938, a bill, a gun control bill forbidding Jews to own guns, clubs, or knives. So the Nazis proved how efficient and how well gun control works.
And in fact, where the Weimar Republic had not so strictly enforced it, they enforced it to the letter.
Oh, absolutely.
And the 1938...
They had to enforce it, by the way.
Yeah.
Is that if you remember when the Nazis came to power, they had to make a deal with the National Socialists there. I'm sorry, I guess, was it the Communists? Or who had to make a deal with?
It was the Communists.
Communists, yes. Because they only had 44% of the vote.
That's right.
And they were not wildly popular when they came to power. And as the war progressed and things were going not so well for Germany, their popularity was going down, not up. So they had to make sure that their opposition did not have access to firearms, particularly the general populace.
Now, all this time that this was taking place in Germany, was there such thing as a militia amongst the German people? Or is that something unique to America?
There was in William Allen Sheridan's book, The Nazi Seizure of Power, he talked about a group which I guess you could say was loosely similar to the National Rifle Association.
Uh-huh.
But it was not exactly a militia. But they capitulated quickly and offered no resistance to the Nazis.
That's reminiscent of some of the statements that some of the backdowns that the NRA have done lately. But they seem to be coming back a little stronger than they were.
Well, I tell you, quite frankly, JPFO has a philosophical difference with the NRA. When we've shown them all the evidence how the late Senator Thomas Dodd of Connecticut had actually used the 1938 Nazi gun control laws as a model for the 68 Gun Control Act, the NRA has just run away from this information.
That's correct, they have.
When we showed them the information about how gun control has been the key to genocide, they've run away from this information. When we talked to these folks, Neil Knox and Tanya Mataxka and Wayne LaPierre and Tom Washington about destroying gun control, they look at us as if it's some kind of nonsense term.
And why do you think that they have an agenda, or do you think that they're innocent in that regard?
Well,
I mean, what?
I think it's just. I think that going back to you were talking about the book you were reading, and you were looking at the history of Julius Caesar and what's going on in America today and other countries.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are folks running the NRA who could be best described as relics of the Cold War. They have made a business out of fighting gun control. And when you talk to them about killing the golden goose that lays the egg, destroying gun control, they're not interested in hearing that.
So that's really what makes their organization work, then, is what you're saying.
Well, they sell fear. There's really no difference, From my perspective, Handgun Control Incorporated and the National Rifle Association are the best of enemies. You take an issue, you politicize it, sit around, and you make money.
Well, this sounds like Hegel at his best.
Just like Anti-Defamation League, you cry anti-Semitism and the money comes rolling in.
Well, what's incredible to me, Aaron, and I know that you've certainly had your battles with the ADL, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But
personally, we've come up with a way to silence the ADL, so I'm glad we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, well, I am too, and especially because there's so many people who call here with all the wrong idea about the ADL and about Jews and about racism and all of this kind of stuff. And I think that what you're going to say tonight is going to really put a lot of these people in their place, and that's exactly where they should be. And I don't mean to hurt them, but certainly to bring out some truths that some people need to hear. I think also that it's extremely important that well, let me finish what I started to say. I find it absolutely incredible that whenever these, not all of them, but certainly some anti-Semitic incidents take place, such as the painting of swastikas on synagogues and things like that, almost immediately there's a fundraising letter in the mailbox of the Jewish neighborhoods, as if some gigantic hand upstairs is guiding this. And I really don't like that. I mean, that's scary.
Well, I think you have to understand some of these Jewish organizations. The Simon Wiesenthal Center, the Anti-Defamation League, just to take two. They have what I call a victim mindset. They're still living in a ghetto, an Eastern European ghetto. They haven't learned to enjoy the freedom that America promises everybody who lives here. That they fear freedom. And they've never quite left the ghetto. To give you a little more historical perspective, if I may, when Moses took the Israelites, when he led them out of Egypt, out of slavery, and into the desert, they complained to him because they found freedom to be a harsh existence. They had to fend for themselves. They wanted to go back to the slavery. And this mindset is still prevalent with many Jews today. Not Jews like me, or most conservative Jews, but many of the Reformed Jews, as I call them, or even some conservative Jews.
Mm-hmm.
They just haven't learned to appreciate freedom. They fear it.
You know, when we were discussing your appearance on this broadcast, you told me a wonderful story, one that I did not know. And I wonder if you would tell that to our listening audience about the financing of the Revolutionary War.
Oh, sure. Part and parcel of financing the Revolutionary War, you know, there was Governor Morris, who was always trying to raise money for George Washington and the troops. But Governor Morris had other people help him. And one of the lesser-known folks of the American Revolution who helped raise money not only for the Army, but for people like James Madison and other folks who were trying to make the Revolution a success, was a young Jewish man. He came from Poland to America. His name was Chaim Solomon. And Chaim Solomon had two special gifts. One, he'd been trained as a banker in Europe, and he had lived in different European capitals, perfecting his craft. And two, he was a polyglot. He was fluent in six different languages. And he was able to convince people around the world to believe in freedom, to believe in liberty, and to buy continental dollars. And he helped raise just enormous sums of money, millions of dollars, for the Continental Congress, so they could finance the American Revolution.
Now, that was a great feat, because at that time, the continental dollar was nothing but a piece of paper like what we're using today. It wasn't for quite a few years that we began to get mine enough and mint enough coins and gold and silver to replace the paper with real money. So,
in fact, the continental dollar today, a real one, probably is worth a whole lot more than it was then.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
So Chaim Solomon was able to convince people to part with their money, and he also used his good name to stand behind some of these loans from people. He also was a spy for George Washington. He spied against the British for George Washington, and he was caught twice by the British and almost hanged, and he was able to talk his way out one time. And the other time was to bribe his way up. He died in his early 40s from tuberculosis and technically bankrupt, because at the end of the war, those dollars didn't have any value, and yet he had a large holding of them. And so his assets equaled his liabilities, and he was technically bankrupt. So he never lived to see the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights. but he made it possible for every hate monger in America today to spew forth their venom. So for all the David Dukes of the world, I just want you to know that a Jew made it possible for you to, you know, be obnoxious.
And that's absolutely important that stays that way, isn't it, Eric? That we do.
It is. You know, I have no problem with people who are anti-Semitic or any or bigots or racists from the standpoint that America should be free enough that everybody can voice their opinion, providing they don't bring physical harm to other people in doing so.
Yeah, provided they do not injure the person or property of any other
Correct.
Human. That's our stance. That's the stance of the Constitution Party. We believe that we all do have a common bond. And aside from all the efforts of people who have agendas to manipulate us against each other, Americans are eventually going to realize that our common bond is liberty, and we better stand together to preserve that, or we're going to all go down in chains. And this has happened over and over and over again throughout the history of the world, that it just comes in cycles, and people forget history, and they forget to be vigilant, and they just give it all up. Wow. You know, I'm really happy that you're here, Aaron.
I think there's another way to look at what you've been saying, you know, to kind of sum it up. I think since the history of time, there's a phrase that we're popular, that we like to use around here, it's real popular with us, and we call it dangerous stupidity. And there's been an awful lot of that since the history of time. There's always been a group of people who think they can do a better job at running the world than anyone else. And they find people to follow along with them blindly and not think clearly about what these folks are offering. And so that always has different names. It would be National Socialism or Communism or just regular socialism or liberalism or what have you. But it all boils down to the same thing. It's dangerous stupidity. And we've got lots of folks in the Beltway, I think, who demonstrate that daily as to how dangerous and stupid they are.
Without a doubt. And what amazes me is some of these people... had a life coming up where they didn't get along too well in society, and that bothers me that these people who couldn't get along well in society and were rioting in the streets are now calling people who are not rioting in the streets the enemy. This is really strange.
Well, it's really what you call the new American zoo.
I'll
the law-abiding citizen is behind the bars, they're locked up in their home, and the animals are running loose in the street.
Well, that certainly seems to be the case.
Or another way to put it, the lunatics have taken over the asylum. So.
Absolutely. Now, Aaron, Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership is not strictly a Jewish organization. Anyone can join, isn't that a fact?
We have a vast membership. It's a broad spectrum of Americans who, and also Canadians. And some people from Australia, England, Israel, Germany, France, who have joined, who understand how important freedom is, and they understand that gun control is not something you simply fight, it's something you destroy. It's a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Must be eliminated permanently worldwide. And so our membership is open to people who can grasp that concept that fighting gun control is not the answer. Destroying it so it is dead. It's really the only way to deal with the concept of gun control.
You know, one of the
things... I would like to add that, you know, we are a tax-exempt educational and civil rights organization. So because of that structure, we don't wine and dine politicians. And it's been our position and that the way to really destroy gun control in America, the way to take this country back and to make freedom reign again, is by reaching out to the masses of people and educating them at the grassroots level instead of whining and dining politicians. I have a theory about politicians. If they're in Washington for more than 4 months, they're lost. So I think we make sure that term limits. If they're for 4 months, they're gone.
And, you know, in this society we have today, they really don't have any reason to come home if they get comfortable there and they actually move their family there, do they? Except to talk to their constituents if they think that they can take time out to do that.
Yeah. Well, they've certainly seen this as a sad state of affairs.
Well, in the early days of this country, a man could not get used to Washington, D.C. and say he's not going to go home because then his whole property, his crops, his everything that he did would just go to waste.
That's correct.
And unless he had, you know, some grown sons that were responsible enough to take care of it. And then he might find that they took it away from him while he was gone. But anyway, before we get into one of the main subjects that we agreed to discuss tonight, let's bring up the topic of the militia. We got about 5 minutes before I've got to take a break. And let's talk about that. What is this the position of the Jews for the preservation of the firearm ownership on the militia?
We're very much in favor of the militia concept. We think that it's about as American as apple pie. And in fact, from our perspective, the Maccabees, Judah Maccabee, the Maccabees were really a Jewish militia.
Uh-huh.
And so we're very, supportive of the militia concept. And we would like to see more and more people get involved in militias. But perhaps more so in the cities, and take this concept of the militia to the average folks in the cities, and get them more accustomed to what the heritage is all about, the militia concept. You know, there's an article that I sent you dealing with American militias, the Battle of Athens, Tennessee. I think you had a chance to look at it, I'm not sure.
No, I didn't get that. I got two pages.
Okay, I will have to send it to you. But to make a long story short, to give you an example of how effective the militia is, 49 years ago in America, on August 1st through the 2nd, 1946, Americans returning from the Pacific and European theater of war came home to McMinn County, Tennessee, and they found the most appalling examples of government gone bad in their own hometown. The kinfolk have been writing them letters about the brutal local politicians and the rigged elections and the schemes of crooked gambling and moonshining and claiming people were drunk and throwing them in jail and not letting them out unless they paid a fine, and things like this were going on. They started the GI party. The GIs couldn't take this nonsense anymore. And lo and behold, on election day, the corrupt Cantrell family that had been running McMinn County for years brought in 200 armed thugs and tried to disrupt the voting, and even shot some GIs who tried to vote, and even took one black man there and said, "Nigger, you're not voting here today," and shot him. Long story short, by nightfall, the GIs realized, particularly after the ballot boxes were stolen.
That's what I was going to ask you. It wasn't a fact that they just marched in and stole the ballot boxes.
Exactly. That they had no choice but to join together as the militia. They went to the local armory, broke in with a truck, took the guns out. Some of the farmers brought along some dynamite and volunteered their shotguns. And they opened fire on the Cantrell family was holding up in the local jail. And the militia had an eight-hour shootout with these armed thugs and the Cantrells, finally blew the door off the jail and got the ballot boxes back out and had an honest count. And the folks on the GI party were elected to hold the public offices. So it's an honest example of 49 years ago how the militia came together and use their firearms to get rid of corrupt, brutal politicians and have honest elections. It's a story that everyone in the militia should be reading and sharing with other people. And we do have copies of it, by the way. We can talk about how to get that later on.
Great. And by the way, folks, there are hundreds, literally hundreds of other stories of where the militia in the traditional history of this country has actually kept the country on track, kept government legal and lawful, have taken their towns and counties back from outlaws, fought as units in the Civil War, in the Spanish-American War, in the Revolutionary War. In fact, if there had been no militia in this country, there would be no country. Don't go away. I'll be right back after this short pause.
And the dream goes on. dust of a country road on the wind you come to call. And it sings in the farms and the factory towns, and where you think there'd be no song at all. And the words are the words that our fathers said, every whistle down the year. And the name of the song is the name of the dream, and it's you to our ears. America, America, and the dream goes on.
Yes, folks, the dream does go on, no matter how bad it gets. No matter what happens, there are always, and always have been, and always will be, those of us who hold the dream dear to our heart and will stand fast in the face of any danger, no matter what, even unto death, for the preservation of liberty. So many people have given their lives for this country. We can do nothing other than what they have given as an example for their posterity. Forever. Or for as long as this earth and the human race lasts. That's what the word posterity means. Now, one of the things that is helping destroy this country that most people don't understand because they're not taught in school, their parents don't teach them. And that is what is money, what is currency, what is the meaning of a note, why money is what it has been throughout history, why the Bible names certain substances as money, why our forefathers set up our economy the way that they did. Now, if you don't know what all of these terms mean, if you've never had a real education in money, you need to call our sponsor, Swiss America Trading. You also should get a copy of this issue of Veritas, because the whole issue is devoted to money and what happened to the gold in Fort Knox. It was stolen. The truth is, Fort Knox is empty. The truth is that what you're holding in your wallet and using every day, called Federal Reserve notes, are not notes. They're not currency, and they're not money. In fact, the law specifically states that money is silver coin of a specific weight and purity, or an equivalent value in gold coin. So our money is based upon a silver dollar. The word dollar is not money either. It's the unit of measurement and the purity of the silver coin, or the equivalent value of gold coin. You see, a dollar can no more be money than a quart can be milk. That should put it a little bit in perspective. If you've never felt or held, and some of you young people have never held a real silver dollar or a real gold coin, then you've got a rude awakening coming. Because the first time you do, you will understand what real money is and how you've been defrauded over the years. So call 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You know, we all tend to procrastinate. It's not easy to be responsible. Also, gold and silver coin, folks, throughout the history of the world, has been the only commodity that has maintained its value no matter what the economy has done. If it's dropped in value, it's because there has been so much absolutely incredible inflation. If it's gone up in value, then you're looking at the opposite. Money has been withheld. But it doesn't matter, because what it can buy has always been the same. For instance, in 100 B.C., you could buy the same number of loaves of bread with 1 ounce of gold coin that you can today, or in 1910, or in 1311, or in 4000 B.C. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the truth. If the economy were to collapse tomorrow, those people who have gold and silver coin will rule the marketplace, and they will survive. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now, folks. 1-800-BUY-COIN. and tell them that you are a steady listener to the Hour of the Time, and you'll get VIP treatment from Swiss America Trading.
Remember the way we began, the closer we get to the best we can be. Whatever time we forgot his words, all the struggles and the scars, if we leave to the shield in the sky full of hope and a flag to fill the stars, America, America.
Well, welcome back, Aaron. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Let's get to the topic that you wanted to discuss tonight. You've made up a new bumper sticker here that when I saw it, almost tears came to my eyes. I never thought that I would see anything like that, and especially from a Jewish organization. But I do know that there are many Jewish people who know the agenda of the ADL, and you're certainly one of them. So why don't you tell me what this is all about? And basically it says, the bumper sticker, folks, says the ADL lies about militias, gun control, and Judaism. And proudly, there is the logo of the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, Incorporated.
Don't forget the bottom of the bumper sticker. We tell people where they can reach the ADL, the United Nations Plaza.
That's correct.
In case folks don't know that. That's where their headquarters is, the United Nations Plaza. This is the first program that we've been on, Bill, that's where we can tell people about this grassroots program we're starting. The campaign is called The ADL Lies. And what we're trying to do is to reach millions and millions of people and create a grassroots movement to tell the ADL, tell the truth, or shut up. And if they can't shut up, then maybe they should have to close their doors and go to some other country. I'll explain this to you. The ADL lies, and we start with militias. The ADL in the last several months has put out two reports dealing with militias. Poorly researched, poorly documented, but they don't hesitate to tar everyone with the same brush, that if they belong to a militia, that they're some kind of extremist or maybe an anti-Semite. Or if they believe in the Second Amendment and gun ownership, again, they're some kind of extremist or an anti-Semite. And that somehow they're a danger to Jews. I'm going to give you an example of just how absurd and bizarre the ADL can be. There's a radio talk show host in Colorado who supports militias and he supports Second Amendment rights.
Norm Resnick?
Yes. And they have branded Norm Resnick, who is an Orthodox Jew, as some kind of danger and threat to Jews because he supports militias and gun ownership.
You know, I've heard this before. I've never heard it firsthand, but I have heard Jews tell me that there is such a thing as a Jew-hating Jew.
Well, I think there are some Jews. Well, we'll have to deal with that in a separate issue.
But what I wanted to bring up is that a real thing, or is that a label they put on somebody who they can't say is anti-Semitic because they are Semitic?
Well, I think it's a little more complex than that. To make a long story short, which is why the other part of our bumper sticker deals with Judaism, is that what the ADL doesn't want to admit, because maybe they don't know it, because maybe they're not very Jewish, even though they like to brand other people as anti-Semitic, is that Jewish law is very clear when it comes to the concept of self-defense. And I sent the exact wording to you, and I told you where people can find us in the Old Testament.
Yes, I've got it right here in front of me.
But, you know, it says if someone comes to kill you, arise quickly and kill them. And that's from the Old Testament. It's also from the Talmud. And Jewish law is very clear. You do not waste your time negotiating with people who are coming to do you harm.
Mm-hmm.
You kill them. If you fear for your life and you fear they're coming to kill you, you are obligated by Jewish law. It is a mandate to arise and kill them. And if they come into your home at night, they are to be considered as dead. That's the wording in the commentary.
Now, according to your reference here, it's taken this is rooted in actually in Exodus chapter 22, verse 1, and it occurs, it occurs twice in the section of the Talmud dealing with the blessings, tractate Brachos?
Brachos, which is Hebrew for
Brachos, yeah, on page 58a and 62b. Okay.
Now, that's the way I feel, and that's the way Norm Resnick feels. But the folks at the ADL who claim that they allege to be Jewish, this is something they can't abide by. Because any Jew who supports gun control, in effect, and the ADL does support gun control, they support the Brady Bill, and they supported the ban on semi-automatic military pattern weapons. And notice I don't use the word assault weapons. Assault weapons is an English translation of Sturmgewehr, which is a Nazi term, meaning assault rifle. So I choose not to use Nazi terms. The ADL uses Nazi terms. The point is that the ADL, of course, would hate. I guess I can use that term, that they would hate a Jew like Norman Resnick or myself because we expose them for what they are, a fraud.
And, of course, no one likes to be exposed as a fraud.
But, you know, the old saying, the emperor has no clothes.
Yes.
The emperors don't like that.
Yeah.
So that's the situation, of trying to explain the Jew-hating Jew concept.
I see.
The other thing that dealing with the ADL, as we talked about briefly here, was that they support gun control. And they lie. They lie about the benefits of gun control. The downside to gun control, as we talked about earlier, is genocide. It makes it possible for governments that have gone bad to murder people. The three parts of the formula for a genocide are a government that's gone bad, a group that's been targeted with hatred, and make sure that group is disarmed.
Now, you make a very good point in what you sent me here. This genocide never is committed by hate groups, but by governments.
Well, absolutely. I'll give you, in fact, governments have murdered more people, not just Jews, but people, than any hate group around. I mean, the Ku Klux Klan has never murdered as many people as Nazi Germany.
But that certainly does not excuse anything that they've done.
Well, of course not. But I'm trying to get people to realize that the Ku Klux Klan, as much as I despise them, I think most decent Americans despise them, is not nearly as dangerous as a government gone bad. Because it's governments that murder people en masse.
And it's governments that have the power to do it.
Once they disarm people.
That's correct.
Once they disarm people. So again, the ADL supports policies that make it possible for governments gone bad to murder people. Not a very Jewish thing to do.
You know, our forefathers, our founding fathers, talked about more than just three balances of power. In fact, they listed five. And if you read all of their writings, you'll see that this is extremely clear. It wasn't just the balance of power between the executive, legislative, and the judicial branches of government, but there were two other balances that were placed in there to make sure that these three could not collude with each other. And that was the power of the jury and the power of the people in their right to keep and bear arms. So there are really five separations of the powers of the state and the balance of power between the state and the people. And most Americans don't understand that. Would you care to discuss that a little bit, Aaron?
I'm not an expert on the five, as you pointed out, other than, the keeping and bearing of arms.
Mm-hmm.
Because once that goes, I guess we could use the term your five-legged stool.
Right.
Once that one goes, then you're on four legs.
Well,
once they've been able to take away the arms, they can forget about the jury.
Yeah. Well, the arms were the last resort, and the jury was to make sure they couldn't take away the arms because our forefathers gave the jury's power to judge not just the facts of the case in question, but the law. And if the law was a bad law, the jury would rule in favor or against of the law, no matter what the facts were. And so if they passed gun laws, whenever it came to court, the jury would just rule in favor of the person who had the gun, and these things would be thrown out. But they've perverted the law now, and judges tell the juries that they can only judge the facts of the case and not the law or anything else, and that they must rule either one way or another, and he tells them how they have to rule. And so that balance of power has been, we know, perverted. And there's another organization that we plan to talk to, which is the Fully Informed Jury Association. But let's go back here. You have listed a little table here, and you've done quite a bit of research. You have outlined throughout history, at least since 1918, how governments have turned bad and what the dates were and how many people were murdered when that happened. And when,
by the way, that the information you have, we give away free with those people who are buying the bumper stickers.
Uh-huh.
That fact sheet comes with it, the JPFO facts versus the ADL lies. That fact sheet comes with the bumper sticker, the ADL lies bumper sticker.
And you've got to have this, folks. I mean, this is just incredible. And it's a,
just tell you what we're trying to accomplish, Bill. I don't mean to interrupt you, but our goal is to try to get 1 million bumper stickers in circulation. I don't know if we'll ever reach that goal, but the point is, if we could do that, upwards of 50 million people a day would be reminded every day of the week that the ADL lies. And if we're able to do this, we can silence the ADL. We can certainly get them out of the business of gun control and condemning militias, and that would go a long way in taking back our country and restoring freedom for all citizens. So the purpose of the bumper sticker is really a campaign to help get the ADL out of the business of maligning and defaming people. In fact, I have a member who refers to the ADL as the Anti-American Defamation League.
I've heard Defamation League, but I had not heard Anti-American Defamation League.
Well, considering some of their activities, I think that my member may be right on target.
Well, I think you're right.
So, you know, later in the program, we can tell people where to get the bumper sticker and also get all the information we're talking about free with it. I'd appreciate that.
Okay. Do you want to give it to them or you want me to?
I guess I can tell people where we are.
Okay.
The campaign is called the ADL Lies. And we send out 2 huge vinyl bumper stickers. They're 4.5 inches high, 14 inches long, multicolor, white background with red, blue, and black ink on them. And they're 2 for $5, postage paid, first class mail. And it includes the information we've been talking about today, with about the Battle of Athens and about the genocide chart showing the different years that there have been genocides and the governments that have done it.
Aaron, you're talking to the wrong audience for this two business. Give them the other higher numbers and prices because my audience will order these in bulk.
Okay. The 25 bumper stickers is $30 postage paid. 50 bumper stickers are $50 postage paid. 100 bumper stickers are $75 postage paid. So they get real cheap real fast. And obviously people can take them to gun shows if they wish and resell them.
Well, that's a good idea. It's a good way for you to make a little bit of money.
But I think anybody who wants to silence the ADL can see the value in doing this. And again, if we can get 1 million bumper stickers, even a quarter of 1 million bumper stickers out there, we can have a tremendous impact on the ADL and anybody who would be naive enough to use their bogus, undocumented, defaming reports.
And I want to remind everybody out there, especially members of the ADL who may be listening, the ADL is an organization, not a race. Attacking an organization because it practices unethical and immoral behavior is not anti-Semitic. It is American.
Absolutely.
Okay. Did you give the address where they can send this money?
They can reach us at JPFO 2872. South Wentworth, Wentworth, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53207. Our daytime phone number is 414-769-0760. Our fax number is 414-483-8435. We do take MasterCard, Visa cards.
Okay, why don't you repeat that address one more time and go through the number of bumper stickers and the prices. Because you're going to get a lot of orders here. I want you to be...
I hope so. It'll do a lot of good if we can get the ADL to go silent and get them out of the business of gun control and defaming decent, hardworking Americans. It's JPFO Incorporated, which is short for Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, but JPFO will do it. 2872 South Wentworth, W-E-N-T-W-O-R-T-H Avenue. The city is Milwaukee, M-I-L-W-A-U-K-E-E, Wisconsin, W-I, 53207. Phone number is 414-769-0760. Our fax number is 414-483-8435. We do take MasterCard, Visa card. And the price, again, the quantity discounts on the bumper stickers is 25 bumper stickers are $30 postage paid, 50 bumper stickers are $50 postage paid, and 100 bumper stickers are $75 postage paid. And these are high-quality vinyl bumper stickers, I might add, 4 1/4 inches high, 14 inches long, multicolor.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, could we impose upon you to tell our listening audience how they can become members of the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership?
Sure, thank you. Membership is $20 a year. It's tax deductible. And that includes, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. Strange clicks going on here.
Well, that happens here quite often.
That includes a subscription to our quarterly newspaper called the Firearms Sentinel. And
which, by the way, folks, has had some excellent, absolutely excellent eye-opening articles that that some of them I've read on the air.
I think you did one with the, well, it had to do with the, was it the ADL again, I think?
Yes, it was.
True.
And that was one that I read. I've read others also.
Yeah, it's a very gutsy publication, so I think people will enjoy reading it. And again, it's only $20 a year. It's tax deductible.
And that's the same address?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Wonderful. Now, Aaron, I know that you've probably had some hardships over this. Why don't you tell us of some repercussions that you've had in your life because of the brave stance that you've taken? It's not a popular thing that you're doing.
Well, it isn't. You know, as you can probably guess by now, the ADL constantly lies about us and attacks us. They have the ear of the New York Times, so they write letters about us, but the New York Times doesn't allow us to respond. The Jewish community nationally, since most Jews do support gun control, would look upon us as troublemaker. Now, that's an interesting term because when the Nazis were going through the Eastern European ghettos, rounding up Jews, Jews who wanted to fight were looked upon as troublemakers. As I said, you know, many of the Jews in America still have this ghetto mentality. They haven't learned to appreciate freedom. And because I say things like that, this gets a few people upset with me. But the truth is the truth, and I think that it's important that those folks in the Jewish community who are supporting this dangerous stupidity of gun control, they have to be singled out. The light of day has to shine on their activities so they don't bring harm, not only to Jews, but to all Americans.
Well, the Jews in the ghettos in Europe during World War II.
But like that, Bill, you know, there are people in the black community who have the same.
Absolutely. Are any ghetto.
The Hispanic community have the same.
Any community that separates itself from or is forcibly separated either way gets certain mindsets, and that is certainly understandable. But there was a point in time, especially in the Warsaw ghetto, when that mindset disappeared and they did rise up with guns.
Yes, Mordecai Nelowitz was a very young man, and he was able to muster some people who followed him, and they started the Jewish Fighting Organization, the JFO. And there was two organizations, but the JFO pretty much became the leading organization. And they knew they weren't going to win, but they realized that the Nazis wanted something of value in that community. They wanted the property. They wanted belongings. And they said that the best way, even though they knew they would not live to see a real victory, let us destroy everything that the Nazis value, and that will be our victory.
And it certainly was. What they did, to me, was a tremendous example for the rest of the world.
But they showed how armed people can indeed take a stand against a government gone bad that has an army on its side. So it can, there is, the possibilities are there to stand up to tyranny and say no. Stand up to evil and say no, you will not prevail.
There is always that possibility, and I consider it to be a duty. And it always brings to mind to me the truest hero that I have ever seen in my entire life, who knew when he did it that he was doomed. And I'm talking about that one, and folks, this also comes into my mind every time someone stands in front of me and says, well, I can't do anything. I'm just one lonely person, and I've got to go to work and do this and that, and I can't get involved in all this kind of stuff. I want you to find the videotape and watch it, or the film if you can get it, because the film is much better, of the one lonely, single, scared to death Chinese student who stood and stopped 17 communist Chinese tanks, one of the most ugliest, most terrible killing machines that's ever been invented on this earth. He stopped them right in their tracks. And because it was broadcast around the world, they didn't kill him. He's still in prison, but he's alive. He is my hero. Aaron, I want to thank you so much.
What a pleasure.
For being a guest.
Quick hour.
Yeah.
Flies.
Well, it always flies when there's something important being discussed, because you just want to talk so much more. But we'll do this again.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for inviting me on.
And thank you for your brave stance and what you're doing for all the people in America who truly appreciate and love liberty.
Thank you.
Good night, folks. And God bless each and every single one of you.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife, thank my lucky stars to be living here today. But the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me. And I have it to you, and it can hurt you today, but there ain't no doubt I love this man. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, where the pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. The men who died, who gave that fight to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her till today. But there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. Defend her till today, but there ain't no doubt.